You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. This is the first show for the year 2025.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's Monday the 6th of January, and boy, I'm raring to go this morning.
I know.
We are hood on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And online, everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right.
Ellen, we've picked up so many people that listen to our fun, unscripted, educational, and quite informative show.
We hit a 21,000-person download. Epic. Like the last 2 weeks.
No.
Not combined.
Wow.
But two separate weeks, we hit 21,000 downloads. So that's all over the world. And that's a tribute to you, Sita, and of course to here to the radio station, 1510wwbc.com. You can go to that website and hear us live each and every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and just hit that Listen Live button and you'll get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we also archive the shows there as well. You can hit that On Demand button and you can catch us on any Monday and you'll see the Download button there as well so that you can download from the station. Or you can download it from any one of our social media channels. We post it on our Facebook. Sita's become quite the TikTok star lately, so we're going to start adding a little bit more to that as well. And, of course, on our website is SitaMediaInc.com.
So for our listeners who are tuning in today, January 6, 2025, on Mondays from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., Ellen O'Neill, myself, and Ali Tamber, we sit here with Danny, who runs our board, Danny Whiting. I almost said Daddy Whiting. Gee, where's Louise? And we talk to people here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We give them a platform to talk about things that they want to have a conversation with us about, whether it's the environment, whether it's a nonprofit, whether people want to talk about financial advocacy and literacy. We talk to the Boys and Girls Club, whatever it is you want to run for office, you want to write a book, whatever it is. For 15 years, we've had people from all walks of life that sat in the studio with us, and we just talk, and it's a very, very unscripted show. We speak from the heart, but we do know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. It's a choice that we make to come to the studio on Mondays, and as long as we have, like Ellen said, tell our listening audience, Ellen, how many people downloaded our show for the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, 21,000. It's just amazing.
And it's a testament to us, all three of us, plus our guests, our sponsors, and Danny.
Yes, absolutely. It's so enlightening to know the shows that people are downloading are all about helping your community and finding new ways of reaching out to the community or putting on an event or something like that. And those are the shows that have gotten the most traction, which, again, warms my heart. That just means that people are getting more involved in community radio and certainly getting more involved in the community. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's always been like that, and maybe just my awareness has become a little higher now just because of what
well,
I see on
Well, we couldn't have
show.
Done the show without you. You are the friend with the capital F, the best friend ever. And Ali, thank you for coming with her, being part of our show. But sure. I have a public service announcement to make. So, you know, we all watch what happened in New Orleans, right? We saw there was a terrorist attack. And it was from inside. It was a person that was born in the United States of a minority, right? And I just have a message for people who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. As I get older and bolder and wiser, I don't have time to waste. I don't have time for nonsensical conversations. I do know that this is the greatest country in the world, whether people want to say it or not, or whether they believe it or not. We do have our differences, and we have difference of opinion politically. But here's the thing. No one should knowingly, willingly come to the United States from any other country or from within to hurt us or any citizens in this country. If you have something, talk about it. Like Sheriff Ivy always says, if you see something, say something. But as I get older and I have grandchildren born and raised in this country, I want them to have a more kinder, just world. And I don't think the way to go is through acts of violence at all, or bullying or things like that. And I think we all need to take a stand and say, listen, this is not going to fly. If you're coming to the United States to hurt someone, do us a favor and do not show up.
Well, and we had three instances, and not that they were any linked, but the instance in Las Vegas, I had friends that work at those casinos that are very close by to where that vicinity was, where there was the electric truck had exploded. And then also we had in Jamaica, New York, there was another mass shooting outside of a bar.
And using it was cars the same, as weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah,
we've got
to stop.
The foundation for everything starts in the home. And start with your children, teaching them to be kinder, more mindful in this world.
Right? And communicate.
We just can't do that. We just can't have that. We have to leave the world a better place than we found it for our grandchildren and the next generation. The only way to do that is to sit down and talk to our children or siblings, friends, family. This violence business is not for me. I'm sorry. It just makes me... We turn off the news. Nobody's watching cable news anymore. They're so, because every time you turn it on, it's something bad.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But anyways, let's tell our listeners today about a show. We've got a gentleman who's calling in. His name is Buck. Buck Benson. He was born in Mississippi. Oh, I know how to say Mississippi. And grew up in a small town reminiscent of the movie Footloose. Buck transitioned to a career in healthcare, becoming a respiratory therapist and then a nurse. And he is going to talk to us a little bit about adversity, battling PTSD, and overcoming it as well. And, of course, me being a nurse, he's also going to talk about bullying and workplace shenanigans being a nurse. Our second segment is with our good friends from the Seashell Festival, right? And it's a Space Coast Seashell Festival. And it's going to be held later this month on January 18th and 19th, I most believe, mm-hmm. right? And it's going to be at the O'Galley Civic Center. And BJ and Susie with a Y is here. They can say hello. You guys could say hello before we start talking to Buck.
Good morning, everyone.
All right. And Susie, thank you for contacting me to be on the show. We will hear from you in a little bit, right? So, Mr. Buck, you're on the phone. Talk to us a little bit about yourself and what made you decide to become a nurse after your service.
Hi, Sita. Thank you. Well, I was, as you said, born in Mississippi and grew up in kind of a very small shoebox of a town, kind of like Footloose, you know, and I wanted to see the world. I got that through entertainment, through movies and art, and I knew that I was going to need help going to college, you know, so I decided to join the Army for it, and that kind of ran concurrently with the September 11th attacks happening in the global terror, and ended up deploying to Iraq twice to combat as an infantryman and got hurt right at the near the end of my second and last tour before I was set to get out and go to college. And, you know, going through that process of being hurt and being medically evacuated off the battlefield and being cared for by the nurses and the medics had an impression on me. And I didn't think about it at the time, but when I was getting out and thinking about what I wanted to do, that came to my mind, and consequently a friend got me into respiratory therapy, and I did enjoy it, but quickly figured out when I got into it that I wanted to be a nurse, and I set on a path to become one.
Well, first to begin with, thank you for your service.
Indeed.
We really appreciate you and all our service members. And So I noticed you right under the name Buck Benson. Ali here was, mm-hmm. was saying we better find out if we could say his real name or not.
Yeah.
I like Buck Benson, though.
I'm keeping it, yeah, it's, you know, anonymous right now.
Good. So we'll leave it that way then.
That works.
Thank you.
Yeah, that works for us. And when you talk about Footloose, boy, everybody here knows about that movie. Everybody wants to dance.
Yeah.
Yeah?
We play that song every week in our band.
Yes. And so you had a traumatic brain injury. How long were you hospitalized?
I was hospitalized, about a week or a little less before I ended up getting sent back to my unit and then eventually the States. With that, I was very fortunate that the injury I had, I was able to seemingly recover pretty quickly, but the effects of that and then PTSD that you don't even know you have at 19 or 20 years old coming out, kind of showed themselves when I was about to get out of the service and I was about to, when I literally started college the day after I discharged, which is a bad mistake, but I did and realized pretty quickly something was wrong and I got help. And then the next semester, everything started improving, my grades, my focus, and and life in general, but definitely, I would say, honestly, it took me a good year or two to recover from that.
I've spoken with so many people that went to Iraq, and a lot of them, especially younger people, they don't feel like they were prepped properly before going. Like they knew nothing about the people, its culture, the origins of that country and how, did you feel like you all were prepped properly before being sent off to a land such where the language is different, the people are different, the food is different? Do you feel like we did enough to prep you guys before you went and give you the information that you needed?
No, honestly, no. With my unit too, I wasn't one of the kind of super elite special forces guys at all. I was a kid in the infantry in a regular army unit, and we kind of had a lot of training on, shooting our weapons and different things, but the way in which we did it wasn't quite, training in the jungle, but then going to the desert for war is kind of counterintuitive, and that's kind of what we did.
Yeah, and did you have any interactions with the people in Iraq? Did you all just stay on the base?
We actually did have some interactions. We had interpreters. We had a barber that eventually came on base. And then when we were out and about, we would give kids candy and water if we had it, and anything we could, stuff from our MREs,
Yeah.
And just let them talk to us.
You sound like a very compassionate person as well. After reading your bio, I thought about, how many men and women are sent off into war in faraway lands. And, we do need a kinder, more, mindful world going forward. I'm hoping that someday somebody will actually have a Department of Peace, a real Department of Peace. I mean, we may not make any money in it, but, I just feel so sad when people come back with PTSD and they have to deal with this because they bring that trauma home to their
family,
spouses and children and and mother and sister and father and the community. And you see so many broken homes because men or women, PTSD is not something that people can deal with. So tell us a little bit about how you suffered with PTSD.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I think one, I was very, very fortunate. I never thought I'd say this, to be so young and single when I was dealing with it. Because I was only just turning 21 when I was getting out and starting college. And different things started to kind of show themselves, like things as simple as driving down the road and getting in traffic. You started to relive roadside bombs or suicide bombers happening. And, you started driving as if you're, bracing for it to happen or trying to get away from it happening. So I remember dealing with that. I remember getting speeding tickets or running a stop sign ticket, something different, because in my mind, I thought I was avoiding danger and I wasn't really fully situationally aware that, hey, I'm back and I'm not there. There was that, and there's the ability to trust people was definitely dampened a lot. And, you know, you kind of felt like no one really, you know, related to you anymore. You didn't relate to them. No one understood you. You didn't understand them. And you kind of just withdrew a little bit, you know.
That's It's a lot of death and destruction with war as well. And also a lot of anxiety. And what you're describing is you wake up anxious, you know, you go to bed anxious because you don't know what's happened in the next day. So you transitioned into writing some books. So talk to us about the books that you have written and where we can find the books.
Yeah, well, first, my books are all on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, I mean, anywhere. They've got services for publishing them, and I managed to figure it out. So Amazon is probably the fastest and most expeditious way to get it, whether you do digital or hard copy or soft copy. It's available in all three. The Amazon's the easiest, and then you can find it at Barnes & Noble and all the other major retailers. But I started, as I went through recovering from all that and becoming a normal person again, I got into respiratory therapy. And as luck would have it, I kind of got forced out of my comfort zone. You know, I nearly stayed in Mississippi again when I went to college there for school, but I kind of ended up getting forced to go to South Florida. Not forced, but that was the opportunity I had. And it was an amazing opportunity at a level one trauma center. So I was getting to meet these amazing people and do things that you would only see in movies and TV shows. And then I met my wife down there. And as we, you know, were both trying to go towards nursing, that took us to Colorado so that I could do that. And again, got to have stories that I thought, man, this, I'm so lucky I got to see this and experience it. And as I'm telling other people about it, they're either laughing or really interested. And I thought I may have something here. Eventually I decided to start writing and writing about my experiences. And the very first one, which is going to be the first in a series called Buddy Stories, you know, I called the character that's loosely based on myself Buddy. And literally it's, called Around the Fire, a nursing story. And then, you know, that carries, I think, probably it starts with one of the most difficult times in my life, that essentially I got singled out for being a war veteran. And it kind of was like the one new nurse in a floor that was, you know, there was no one quite like me. I was a former RT, I was a veteran, and I had a lot of people, including my managers, that were younger than I was and that, you know, kind of didn't really want me there. They wanted someone else there. And they set about, you know, trying to get rid of me through bullying and isolating me, you know, making my life pretty hard. And
that's pretty wrong because, I mean, most people, we love when our veterans come back and go back to school and, you know, or learn a trade and get back into the workforce. Why do you think they were bullying you? Because, yeah, your book is about the harrowing experiences of the realities of war, but then you came back into civilian life, and here you are being bullied.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, the culture of the place that I happened to be in, I quickly found out that it does happen in nursing, but I happened to be in a hospital where that bad culture was running rampant. You had people that were very ill-qualified to be doing the management jobs they were, which I know that probably sounds familiar for a lot of nursing friends, but they were in charge of us, you know.
Well, sometimes it's like a cult, you know. Sometimes nursing is like a clique, you know, and certain people get into that cliquish administrative realm of things, and some people don't. And if you're viewed as an outsider or someone who is quote-unquote a mischief maker or bringing in ideas that people don't want, you know, then you do get labeled. And I've seen that as a nurse myself. I've never been in any cliques and things like that. I do my aid and hit the gate. I don't like that kind of stuff.
Right.
I don't want to be involved. I got too much stuff going on at home. I'm the CEO of my house and the CFO my house, you know. But I know what you're saying, yes. Were you able to speak with anyone when you felt that you were being bullied in HR?
Yes, I had, it was a pretty bad systemic problem with that particular hospital and hospital system. I call it the HCO, you know. I took, you know, to make everything anonymous, it stands for healthcare organization. So the people in there and the union representatives. You know, I was in a position as a new nurse where in the first year they can let you go for any reason or no reason at all. And when they couldn't get me to quit, they essentially pulled the no reason at all route and did it non-adversarially. They let me go. And that's kind of how the book starts. But I did basically try everybody, including my congressman, to get them to help me. And they didn't relent, you know, and, you know, we can hire and fire whoever we want. But the story kicks off from when I'm let go, but carries on this, what I didn't realize was going to be such a beautiful journey that got me in a better place than I could have ever imagined and made all the goals that I wanted to accomplish in nursing come true,
yeah.
You know, in such an amazing way.
Well, you know, most patients, when you're caring for them, if you tell them that you're a veteran and that you're returning to the workforce after your service, they want to hear your story.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think, Allie?
Absolutely. It bothers me all over about bullying in general, whether it's your kids in high school or whether it's situations like you've got there, Buck. I don't understand to what end. How could that bring joy to the people that do that? I don't know where the satisfaction comes from.
I think some people unknowingly do it too.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, they don't realize that they're doing it. I mean, just having a conversation without including people sometimes, it's a form of bullying too. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So Buck, so talk to us now. How do you think we can improve the culture, not just in nursing, but other workplaces, so that people don't feel like they're being bullied?
Sure. Yeah. I think that, you know, for one thing, your idea about the Department of Peace thing could maybe be copied and pasted into even.
Well, I'm going to let you start that, Mr. Bob. that's your assignment. You know, that's your assignment for this year.
Yeah, I think that honestly, you know, managers are so rarely fired for bad performance or for bullying others or for, you know, the things that they do. So I think that you have to hold their feet to the fire more, and you have to nurture an environment through HR unions or whatever you have that doesn't tolerate bullying and that works, you know, to include everyone. Kind of like, I remember there was a time in the Army where, you know, we'd have some guys that didn't quite fit in with the rest of us, but our good leaders challenged us and be like, well, you guys are all going to feel some pain if you can't figure out a way to work with them. And we did, and became the best of friends. And I think that there's some lessons to learn there, that if the nursing staff acts a certain way, you know, you get them all together or individually and just say, you know, their success is your success and vice versa.
Well, it should be teamwork, right? I think what you're saying is it's a teamwork. I mean, from the janitor who cleans the floors to the person who's cooking the meals in the kitchen for the residents or the patients, everyone is in it together, and the end result is to have a wholesome patient, right? And a patient that's cured, a patient that's going home or rehab or whatever it is. But when that workforce, that teamwork is broken, it cannot be done. So what when you worked as a nurse and you spoke to people in admin, were there certain things you could pinpoint for them? For example, you know, I know in nursing, sometimes supplies is an issue. Sometimes getting medication on time is an issue. The turnover rate for a patient, when a patient leaves admission and discharge, that one nurse have to take care of all the patients on the floor as well as do the admission, do a discharge. If someone falls, you have to do that as well. Sometimes it's a manpower issue as well. Were you able to pinpoint to them all the issues that you saw that contributed to the bullying from the other nurses?
I was actually, you know, not at first. And as you read the book and you find out, you know, it starts from kind of a really sad place. It seems hopeless, but then it kicks into high gear and goes positive, and then has some ups and downs. But essentially, when I left that place, I had been under a scholarship agreement with them to work for them for a couple of years because they did pay my tuition for my BSN. But the admins that wanted to let me go so that they could hire who they wanted said, oh, yeah, don't worry about that. That's on us. Eventually, a friend of mine that was in the healthcare organization blew a whistle And unbeknownst to me, I was working surgical trauma and loving it and having a great time. And I was kind of healing and really coming into my own as a nurse. And the big organization people, big admin people came calling and asked me what happened. And I told them, I gave them my evidence, and they made a decision that they were pretty horrified this was done to a veteran and how it was done. And they made it their business that they wanted to get me back into the organization. And offer me different ways to do it, including moving to another state. And the way that they worked with me and the fact that they did bring, they did listen to the issues that I brought to them, gave me enough faith to take the leap and go back and cooperate with them. And because I did, I got to do and experience so many amazing things that's in the book. You know, it did ultimately come back on the bullies, but and I think that they didn't want me around when it did happen. But
well, that's usually you know, how it goes. That's usually how it goes, Mr. Buck Benson.
Yep.
And the book is called Around the Fire, and you also wrote you wrote another book, before that one,
yep.
The Fallen Star. That sounds like a good book as well.
Thank you, The Fallen Star of Dixie. Yes, it is. It's a Southern tragedy. It's based on things that I saw growing up in that Footloose type town. It is a work of fiction. It's characters are inspired by things I saw in you, but they're not really any real people or things. They're kind of like, you know, you write what you know. So you
a lot of small town secrets.
Yeah. You can put that into stories, and that's kind of where I drew from. So that's coming out in a couple of months.
Yeah, you face a lot of adversity in your life, Mr. Buck Benson. You really have, and you came through. But I'm glad that you speak out about the issues facing veterans after their service, because you know, we often hear so many politicians talk about the veterans and the VA and improving the lives for people and mental health and all that, but in real life, there's more people like you facing adversity than we know it, and a lot of people are not brave enough, courageous enough to come forward. So what would you say to those folks who are facing the same sort of issues in their workplace, and being a veteran, they just don't want to make any noise?
You know, I'd say that anything worth doing is going to be scary at first. You know, speaking up or doing the right thing is always going to be scary. You know, even trying to achieve your dreams or do what you want is going to be frightening. It is so much easier to be quiet and just go with the flow. But, you know, if it were the right thing, it wouldn't be easy.
Well, you know, that sort of stuff, to go with the flow, you do that after you turn 50. Yeah, before
right.
50, you've got to make some noise.
Yeah. A mover and a shaker.
Yeah, before 50, you kind of become, like you said, a mover and a shaker.
Well, and I remember an old saying that I used to use all the time, and I say, anything worth doing is worth working for, you know, and it's worth measuring, and it's worth your time and effort, because someone out there is going to make you're going to make a difference in their life.
Well, yeah, and Mr. Benson, you know what? I feel like you have what it takes to run for office. I really do. You kind of remind me of J.D. Vance a little bit, because of his growing up in a small town as well. And his book was on Netflix, right? Wasn't it a movie?
Hillbilly Elegy, I remember. Yeah, they made it.
Yeah, I watched it. So tell us, do you think that you could take this experience? It's unique. You have a unique blend of you're very authentic, and you're very inspiring and motivating as well. Can you take your experience from the war in Iraq and what you learned there and brought it home? And now you're writing these books. You are a nurse. You're a respiratory therapist. You've done what most people would like to do when they come out of the service. Can you take that one step further and actually run for office and maybe be an advocate for more people who are coming out of the service, and regular people too?
You never say never. I'd love to do it.
And maybe you could create the Department of Peace for us too.
That's right.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. But so are you working right now as a nurse, or are you just concentrating on the future and writing more books?
Yeah, I'm actually a nurse practitioner now, and I'm writing books.
I am so proud of you. If nobody ever told you this, I'm proud of you that you stood up for the profession. I'm proud of you that you fought for this country. And most importantly, that you're not afraid, because I've been a nurse for 35, I don't know, oh gosh, no more than that. 37 years or something. And I remember, when I first went into nursing, there was a woman, a nurse who was, trying to insert a catheter in someone, a Foley catheter. And I saw her insert that same Foley catheter several times into the same person. And I, with my big mouth, you know, being 21 years of age, I said, "Hey, my teacher said you're supposed to get a new catheter every time you try to insert." And she says, "Listen, in the real world, I don't have no time to go get no new catheter, okay? So you're going to learn that." And I still remember that up to today, that this nurse told me that, you know. And I saw several things like that later on. I'd be like, well, aren't we supposed to cut up the food for the patient? Aren't we supposed to make sure they have a cup of coffee, a cup of tea? And they'll be like, if you have time, go get it. And so these little things in nursing, it always made me think about the profession, you know? Did you see things like that when people were just so busy that they really couldn't do the right thing?
Oh, for sure. I definitely say chapter 2 actually touches on some of that. So I kind of giggled. There was a newer nurse that we had that I know lost a cap in someone in a soap suds enema. She didn't take the cap off the end of the tube before.
Oh, that's painful.
Didn't change out blunt needles to injection needles before giving heparin, just different things like that.
And you know what's sad? I mean, you're a nurse practitioner now, and God bless you for that. I mean, but it's like you see things, you know, in the regular world, and I'm sure people see it in all professions. You hear teachers talk about the lack of having, you know, more teachers in the school or more resource officers because they've got so many kids. You know, you hear people in retail talk about the customer who has to wait. But in nursing, we are there to help people to get better. And when someone says, "I've got to go to the bathroom," and a person says to them, "Well, I can't, I'm doing something else." And you contribute to that person becoming incontinent because the nursing assistant puts a brief on them. It bothers you as a human being that if we don't have enough manpower, you know, you give people Lasix and a diuretic, and then they say, "I have to go to the bathroom," but there's no staff to take them to the bathroom. And those kind of things always bothered me as a nurse. Like, dude, don't give them the Lasix if you can't take them to the toilet, you know?
Yep.
Well, tell us one more time where we can get your books, and we appreciate all you're doing to try to improve the culture, not just in nursing, but for veterans, and Ellen will take it away from there.
Yeah, thank you. Around the Fire is out now on Amazon and Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, and all major retailers. And The Fallen Star of Dixie should be out either later this month or early next month.
Right. And for our listeners, that is the voice of Mr. Buck Benson, who is an author, and he just disclosed a nurse practitioner as well. How wonderful.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he served at our country well in Iraq. And he's a mover and a shaker, like Ali says. He's not going to sit down quietly.
My sister served as the president for the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. So you'll do a fantastic. I love that position that you have. That's great. Anyway, we are going to move on and listen to our sponsors real quick. Buck Benson, thank you so much for sharing your time with us this morning. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. 1510 WWBC. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, then we share all of that great info on our website, which is CetaMediaInc.com, and also all the social media channels. Like I said earlier, Sita's becoming quite the TikTok.
Queen. Oh, you just compliment. Make my head so big.
She's so good.
So you know, we always say that our show is fun, entertaining at times, and quite unscripted, and we proved it with Mr. Buck Benson.
Yes.
I felt as though he was sitting right next to us here in the studio, and talking about his journey, you know?
Yeah.
So that's good. That's a feel you want, because I think the listeners can gather that from us as
indeed.
Well, sitting here, right? So for our listeners who are tuning in, this is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and our second segment is with BJ and Susie with a Y. And we're going to talk with them about the Seashell Festival for 2025 here on the Space Coast. It's going to be at the O'Galley Civic Center. And that's on January 18th and 19th from 9:30 to 4 p.m. And they're going to tell us all about the seashells. And my gosh, you should see the ones they brought into the studio. They're beautiful. So, BJ, talk to our listeners. Tell us why you got involved with the Seashell Festival and the Astronaut Club.
I previously was the director at our local church here with my husband. And we always took the children out on outings. And so we heard about this festival at the auditorium. And we said, well, let's do that, because they had a lot of nature projects that we do with them. And I've always loved the ocean. I've always loved the outdoors. My husband and I are both nature people. But when I walked into that auditorium and I saw all the different seashells, colors, different shapes, just something you can't imagine. It's not like a seashell that rolls up on the beach after it's been around for a while. They're just beautiful. The creations are so, so beautiful.
Yeah. It's almost, it's like a work of art.
Indeed.
And it's like people don't pay attention, but once you start talking about it and you look at them, you're like, wait a minute, this, God really has made the most magnificent planet for us.
God's creation.
Yes.
And they're all, they're natural colors. They're not painted or anything. You know, they come out of the ocean with every color you can imagine, every spot, stripe,
and they're
all
different.
Kind of spiky shells, and just gorgeous.
And Susie, how did you get involved with the Space Coast Seashell Festival?
Similar to BJ, I've always loved seashells. Picked them up on the beach, and it brought back happy memories of going with the family out to vacation. But same thing. I went into the auditorium one year and saw the seashells and could not believe my eyes because, again, the seashells that you find on the beach, they're broken up. They're mostly white. They might be, you know, discolored from being in the sun. The things that are at the Space Coast Seashell Festival are brought in by vendors and exhibitors from across the country who get them from all around the world. I mean, countries I never heard of, Vanuatu, for example. and so I just decided I wanted more of that, become a Space Coast, Astronaut Trail Shell Club member, get to share my love with other people, and really enjoy sharing best places to shell and learning about the animals that make them. And it's just a lot of fun.
It's quite a nice hobby. Yeah? So BJ, talk to us about this. So she's saying that international, like there's seashells all over the world, and somehow, somewhere, you guys get your hands on these for this festival.
Yes, at our show, we will have vendors from all over the United States. People will come and show their actual exhibits, and some will be scientific, very detailed, but we also have a big division of artistic where a lot of the people make like crafts for the home or decor for the home out of the actual seashells.
And Susie, how does one become a Seashell Astronaut Club member?
Well, that's simple. You just show up once a month up at Satellite Beach at the City Hall. We meet 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's we're always looking for new members. It's free to come. If you like it, you can join us. It's $15 for the entire family for the entire year. And it's just a nice group of people. We just get together and share ideas, do show and tell. We've recently started doing outings so that we can share in more social events and, you know, do things together just for fun. And so it's an easy thing to become a club member.
Yeah. And some of the shells are microscopic, I heard, and some are as large as a football.
Yes, ma'am.
So talk to us about, I mean, that's amazing. So then would you have a microscope available there for people to look at these little tiny ones?
Not actually at the show, but they're tiny enough where you need. But there are some that you can just take like a hand of sand, and if you put that under the microscope, you can actually see seashells in that sand that you wouldn't see with your own eye.
Yeah, and in today's world, we'll take a picture of it and then enlarge the picture. On the
there
box.
You go.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's when they're fully grown. The microscopic ones are not just babies. This is a fully grown animal that has made this shell to that size. But then there's also shells that are 400 pounds. I mean, it's just amazing.
Wow. So there's going to be a lot of vendors at the festival. So talk to us about the vendors and the displays and the kids' corner, and what should one expect if they attend the Seashell Festival?
Last year we started a kids program there, and we let the children have a free seashell. We had seashells for them to paint. We had like printouts that they could work for word search or learn about the actual shells, where they live, how they grow, and that was a big hit. So we're going to do that again. So we hope that the families will bring all the children with them. Free to get in. There's no charge for this whatsoever.
Yeah. And so give us the address and the date where it's going to be held again.
It's at the O'Galley Civic Center, and that's 1551 Highland Avenue in Melbourne, the O'Galley section. And it's going to be Saturday the 18th and Sunday the 19th. Both days will be open from 9:30 to 4.
Yeah. And, you know, Susie, the shells that you brought in, some of these look like the shells that we use at the Hindu prayers. I didn't realize it, but I'm actually reading a book too, and these seashells, a lot of cultural emotional experiences with these as well. If any one of you want to talk about that, because it seems as though it crosses cultures.
Absolutely. And shells are used in all kinds of things. I mean, they might be used as a form of communication, maybe as a horn to notify other people in the community or whatever. I'm sure that that was hundreds of years ago. But they've been used in fashion. They're used in to make dyes, beautiful purple colors from a particular type of shell. Jewelry, BJ, what?
Yep, jewelry.
The Murex shell makes the purple dye. And also, actually, our first form of money was the cowrie one of the cowrie shells that the Native Americans used for years and years.
It's such a cool history around here. And if you know anything about specifically Ogallee history, that having it at the Ogallee Civic Center is a big boost for me anyway. Because if you know Ogallee history, there was a huge pineapple area, but they were harvesting shells and harvesting some of these beautiful things from that section right there in the lagoon, as well as the beach. That area is such so historic. And I'm surprised, Sita, that that Trinidad and Tobago haven't, you know, I know there's a lot of stuff that goes on there as well, but I know that there were people, because we had folks here last year as well, and I met some new friends that said that they got a lot of their shells and the collectibles from the Caribbean.
Yeah, they do.
Specific area,
they
right?
Do
you remember as a child, like, being a big shell person?
No, I was just going to ask BJ and Susie. There's so many hobbies and things to get into, but a lot of people wouldn't think about shells. And like you say, it's free. It's on the beach. It's all over the world. But I never really got, but you know, transportation is a big thing to get to the beaches. And we weren't people that had a lot of cars at our house, one car. So, I mean, your father would have to literally take you to the beach to look for a shell, and he might give you a clout in the head and say, stay home instead, you know? But I mean, we live here on the Space Coast, right? Where people can readily drive to the beach.
Yes.
So what can we do to bring more awareness to seashells and how beautiful they are and how happy they make you and what a great form of art it is?
That's why we do the Seashell Festival, because it's to educate the people and let them know that there's not just a few shells around here, but all over the world. In fact, some of our vendors have actually come from Brazil all the way to Ogallee, Florida, Melbourne, to show their shells from their area. A lot of the exhibits are from all over the place. And we're one of the larger seashell festivals that will have people coming from all over the United States just to share their shells. Far as Washington State.
Yeah, and look what it does for our area when people come from different places. They stay in our hotels, they eat in our restaurants, they enjoy the Space Coast. It's very touristy, if you ask me.
Very.
Right? So Susie, what happens with these shells after the festival? Do you guys sell them? Do they use them for another work of art? Would the vendors, I would assume they would take back the beautiful larger pieces with them as well. You've got it protected like jewelry, precious gems.
Yeah, so we're the first show of the year. There's actually a shell circuit, I guess, for lack of a better word. And so Broward puts on a seashell show, and Sanibel, and I think North Carolina, they all have seashell shows. We're the first one every year, the third week of January. And so
that's commendable.
Yeah, so
that's wonderful. You get first people to see it, right?
Yeah, so people come to us first, and but then the shell vendors and exhibitors will travel around to the other locations and share their love of shells with the communities there.
Yeah.
So, but to answer the other part of your question, there are both scientific exhibits as well as vendors, and the vendors are selling these beautiful shells so that you can take them home with you and decorate your own home or jewelry or, you know, add to your collection. There's shells for crafters. There's all kinds of things that people do with them once they get home.
Yeah. And BJ, so are you all partnering with the schools so that the students could learn about shells? Is there such a thing?
Yes. We have done programs for the children that are, like, for their science projects. And what we do is we're an actual local club. It's Astronaut Trail Shell Club, and we sponsor the Seashell Festival every third week of January. And if you want to learn more about the actual programs that we have, we do outings once a month now. We're locally meeting in Satellite Beach on Wednesdays, the first Wednesday of each month. We have programs about people that have done field trips to different areas collecting the shells. We've done recent programs like on the Florida Keys, shells from Hawaii, the dyes that they make.
There's actually a website called the Conchologists of America. And the event here in O'Galley is actually posted on there as well. But I love the fact that we're doing so much in the conservation piece too. And much like a lot of other things that happen, you know, we find, dead bodies, basically. You know, when you find the archived or older things out there, there's a story that goes with every one. And I love the fact that the shells are telling us stories about how well our conservation is going and what we're doing to the waterways and what we could still be doing better.
It brings awareness, right?
For our environment. But the shells, much like bodies, react to what's going on in our environment. So the fact that you have these beautiful shells tells me that we're, you know, obviously we're doing some good things in some areas, but we can be doing so much better.
Right.
And
from a conservation point. Well, it's all about education, right?
Right.
And so for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we're speaking with BJ and Susie from the Space Coast Seashell Festival, and they're with the Astronaut Trail Shell Club. So what should one expect when they come to the festival? Is it pet-friendly? And are there food trucks? Because, you know, some people come there, it's a family thing. They want to enjoy the Seashell Festival, but they want to eat as well, and they might want to bring a pet.
Right. Unfortunately, the Civic Center does not allow pets. We have tried to do that. And we will have possibly a lady that's selling cookies. She's been to a lot of the different festivals around the city, and she'll be there. But as far as a food truck, at this time we don't have that, and it's just kind of limited space because we're kind of outgrowing that space, unfortunately.
And it says you have boat tours?
That's one of our raffle items.
Oh, I was going to say, like, wait, how are you going to get on a boat from the O'Galley Civic Center? Susie, you have face painting for the kids, and you have raffles and things like that. So you're going to make it a really fun affair.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we're doing face painting this year, but we have fantastic raffles, pineapples, restaurant, and we've got shells, of course, but we've got tickets to Kennedy Space Center and the Brevard Zoo, and there's all kinds of fun things like this private boating trip to a shell island that are going to be part of our raffles. So
Shell Island is here?
No, it's not the name of an island. It's a tour to an island where people can go shelling. And you can win.
Shelling, listen to the word.
I know.
So how do you become a beginner sheller to start shelling?
You join the Astronaut Trail Shell Club.
There you go.
I should have known that. It really sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
So you brought some shells. You want to tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends the description of some of those shells, maybe for a minute?
Sure. Well, I just brought some because I wanted to share with you the reason why I got into shelling, which is that they're just, A, so beautiful and colorful, and they come in every variety. BJ already mentioned, but, I mean, they're yellow and orange and purple and green and white and black and striped and zigzag and polka dot. I mean, and they come in all different sizes.
They're so fragile, too. You really can't. You have to be very careful with this one.
Well,
I wouldn't want to drop this fella.
Not as fragile as you think. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is, you know, I grew up, we went to the beach and then we went to a souvenir shell shop and you'd see hermit crabs and the crab was inside the shell. And I thought all, you know, that shells were just like moved into by crabs and animals. It never dawned on me until I joined the club and started to learn about
And you learned
shells.
About shelling.
But what I didn't realize that these things are not like the homes of the animals that live inside. They are made by the animals. They're like our bones, you know, a skeleton. Yeah. And that the other thing that's kind of silly, but of course I knew about oysters and, you know, clams and scallops, but it never occurred to me that some of these shells are lived in by snails. You know, it's a sea snail.
Yeah.
And
it's
so
a home.
It's, well, but it's not their home. It's their body.
It's part of their exoskeleton.
Right, right. Yeah.
They can't survive without it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's their protection.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the cool part is that
the one is gorgeous.
The conservation piece of most of the shelling, at least what I'm reading, is the mollusks. It's a big deal, like, because the mollusks are the things that are the filter for most of the dirt and damage that we do to the environment and to the area. So I'm not saying that every one of these shells is a mollusk, but they are participants in the cleaning up of our
ecosystem
and our waterways.
Yeah. Yeah.
So getting the, they're kind of like heroes, you know, they're little like ecological heroes of of the little things that they're doing to make sure that our environment stays good. And Danny is a fisherman, you know, being out on the waterway all the time, he gets to see a lot of this as well and see not just the damage that we do, but also the conservation piece of how we're trying to clean it up.
So BJ, would you say that the Astronaut Shell Club has a mission? Do you guys have a mission statement?
Yes, it was like I said previously, our mission is to educate the community, the public, and let them aware of the different shells and also, you know, what they do provide for the water.
Yeah. And Susie, if somebody wanted to join, you have a website?
We do. It's Space Coast Seashells. We're on Facebook. You'll find our events there and learn about when our next meetings are coming up. So, we encourage everybody to come check
us out. Yeah, do you have a lot of the young people that are coming to learn? And if not, what can we do on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to send more people your way? Because this is absolutely fascinating. It's fantastic, the ones you brought, the colors, the shape, the sizes, and to think that it just for free in our oceans and everywhere else.
We actually have a Florida state shell, which I brought to show you, Sita. It's the horse conch. And they start out from a tiny speck, and they get up to 24 inches.
Oh, so this was that size before?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, it was actually smaller than that, but just, and then I have some that are very large.
You know, somebody told me once in the United States you could bottle and sell just about anything. I would think you could put this into a beautiful packaging and sell this for like $40. 50,
oh, easy.
Maybe a $100.
Oh, maybe even
I
more
would
than
say
that.
$200.
Well, wasn't that a horn?
Because it's so gorgeous.
Didn't they use that as a horn in musical instruments?
Yeah,
in some of the
in India they use it as a horn.
Yeah.
They did that in Key West.
My goodness.
Yeah, the conch.
So again, the Space Coast 2025 Seashell Festival. This is actually the 44th annual Seashell Festival. It's on Saturday, January 18th and Sunday the 19th from 9:30 to 4 p.m. at the O'Galley Civic Center. The address is 1555 Highland Avenue in Melbourne. Great parking. I've been there tons of time. And it's free. F-R-E-E. Free admission.
Right.
Vendors, displays, kids' corners, scientific and artistic exhibits, live demos, door prizes, raffles, and you'll learn about all these gorgeous shells. Thank you.
And you'll meet
for
other
coming.
People that are enthusiasts as well. So that's awesome.
Well,
that's
here you are. You got 10 seconds each if you want to say anything that you didn't get to say before Danny throws us off air.
Go ahead.
Come join us. You will not believe it until you see it with your own eyes.
That's right. Get inspired. Inspired. And I've posted on all of our Facebook pages already. The blog for the website will be out just in a few hours. But of course, you can download it off of the 1510 WWBC website. Folks, thanks again for another fantastic episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We can't wait to get out to the Shell Festival on January 18th and 19th in the O'Galley Civic Center. And we will talk to you next week right here Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.